Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it, one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
My name is Quinn, pronouns they, them. This week, we're talking about season 2, episode 19, the one where Eddie won't go.
This episode aired on March 28th, 1996. It was written by Michael Curtis and Gregory S. Malins, and it was directed by our good old friend Michael Lembeck.
According to IMDb, this is the episode where Chandler demands that Eddie moves out. However, he doesn't seem to get the message. Meanwhile, a book on empowerment for women inspires the girls in order to pay his bills. Sorry, I'm reading this for the first time. Oh, IMDb. In order to pay his bills, Ross convinces Joey to audition for a role he doesn't want.
What, Quinn, you don't like it when, when
it inspires the girls.
When women are referred to as girls? I think they did this to, like, prevent there from being the word woman twice. Meanwhile, a book on empowerment for women inspires the women. But they literally could have just said Rachel, Monica, and Phoebe. Anyways, this is also the one where the women discover female empowerment as it's written by men. And Chandler kicks out his mentally ill roommate by gaslighting him. Hmm. Oh boy, do we have lots to talk about today.
This podcast is made possible by you. So thank you everyone who supports us on Patreon, including our new supporter, Melody. Thank you so much for becoming part of our Smelly Cat community. It's very exciting.
All right, Quinn, how do you feel about this episode?
Oof. I have lots of feels. When I was like, it's interesting when you just watch an episode, you kind of just can like laugh with the humor. But I not only have, like, I've been in not the exact situation as Chandler, but have been in a somewhat relatable situation. And I have had friends who are in the exact situation as Chandler. And honestly, like, when I sat down to, like, start writing out what I wanted to talk about in this episode, it actually, like, made me a little emotional. Because this episode is such... It's just like a very, it's a huge problem. It's like, this is what makes these situations so hard. It's like, it's this mentality and like the belief, like this belittling of the situation and dealing with it. And also like, you know, Eddie's homeless at the end of this, everyone, just FYI. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I really want to talk about that.
You didn't fully articulate your feelings there. You just started a bunch of sentences. Which I think is just how you're feeling. So in not articulating your feelings. Yeah,
I guess I do want to get into it. I don't want to wait until the end of the episode to talk about it.
No.
Because, you know, stats show that, you know, a lot of people don't finish podcasts in general. And our podcasts are very long, so I don't blame you guys if you don't get to the end every time. But you are missing the best friend of the episode at the end of every episode.
Okay, yeah. So I want to talk about gaslighting Eddie and the lack of support for folks with mental illness, obviously. I kind of said it in the beginning, but I want to talk about the way that the show is pretty much kind of making fun of women's empowerment, and or whether or not it actually is, and maybe we can debate that a little bit.
Want to debate that a little bit, because part of me is like, oh my god, this is exactly how it happens.
I just want to talk about it a little bit, because I do have mixed feelings about the fact that, like, this entire episode was written by two men,
right?
And like what means and anyways. And then I also want to talk about Ross and Joey's friendship.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff.
All right. So
first opening scene, we're in Chandler's bedroom, which, by the way, before we get into the actual seriousness of it, I just want to take a second to be like, do you guys remember what Chandler's bedroom looked like when Aurora was in it?
Oh, wow. It's much bigger.
Yeah, much bigger. Kind of nicer, too.
Yeah. So, obviously, Eddie is watching him sleep.
And he rolls over and has a very realistic reaction to the situation.
Sheer panic.
yes, and horror of, like, the idea of, like, someone watching you sleep.
Yeah, super creepy.
And, like, yeah, so I guess I just want to, like, talk about what we talked about in the last episode. Like, the last episode was, like, kind of light and funny because it was a depiction or caricature of, you know, a very relatable scenario where, for people who've had roommates, where you're likely to have that roommate in your life that was, like, the worst.
Watching you sleep?
No. The worst. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, oh my God, what have I done? Why am I living with this person? You know, like, and it's like...
I've never had that experience.
Oh my God, you're so lucky.
well, I have, but they weren't, like, creepy. They were
maybe
just...
Maybe you were the person.
Yo, they put out a Netflix show called The World's Worst Roommates.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, and I was thinking that we should watch it.
Oh my God, can I, like sign people up for the show? I have a few people in mind.
Be cool. They might be listening. No, I definitely can relate to, like, bad roommates and less so, creepy roommates. I definitely never had any, like, creepy roommates. Right.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that last episode was really about creepy roommates. It was more about, like, intense. Oh, this person is, like, really intense and not at all what I, like, we're not vibing in the way that I thought that we were going to vibe. And then the actual, like, just, like, friction of your two characters is, like, not working. And, like, the expectations that you had that, like, in Chandler's case, like, based off of, like, his past roommate, where he just kind of expected Eddie to, like, fill that void wasn't there. And there was, like, tension around it. Mm. Anyway, and then, like, finding out that Eddie's, like, kind of intense and puts him on edge.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's like light and funny because it's, like, this guy is just, like, it's a caricature of, like, you moving in with someone and it's really not what you expected it to be.
Yeah, totally.
This episode moves into, like, oh, Eddie has mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And he has a mental illness and that changes the game entirely. It's completely different.
Yeah.
And I feel like this first scene here is, like, freaking hilarious. It's still kind of, like, in the category of last episode.
Yeah.
Where it's just, like, this person has completely different ideas of what boundaries are. And it's, like, this is, like, you could say, like, oh, well, Chandler, you just need to explain your boundaries. But at a certain point, you don't want to have to explain to your roommate to not...
Be in your bedroom be at in your night bedroom and
watching you sleep.
It feels just like a regular human boundary.
Yeah, it's just like that. That's like, okay, I think we're at a point where we're starting at a point where we're in two different places too much for this to work.
Yeah, totally.
So
then he freaks out and he basically says you need to move out. But I do want to say that there's this moment where, like, Eddie, I think Adam Goldberg, who plays Eddie, is, like, such an incredible actor, for the record. Like, he is hilarious. Like, yeah. And he has this moment where he just, like, he says, like, yes, I watch you sleep. It makes me peaceful. And, like, the way he, like, he closes his eyes and he, like, shakes his hand and he's just, like, really thinking about it. And you're just, like,
he's so genuine.
Yeah. And I'm just, like, I'm really glad it makes you peaceful. And for a moment, I'm, like, I'm on his side. I'm, like, this is, yeah, like, you do what you need. And then I'm, like, no, wait, it's creepy.
It's so funny. Yeah. He does this character so well. Like, he's just so genuine and, like, and I just love how this scene, he's just so, like, there's nothing wrong with what he's doing, you know? Totally. Like, he's just, like, confused by it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's so funny. Perfect. Like, there's clearly no, like, Eddie, in this case, even though it's creepy and strange, he's, like, clearly not a threat.
Yeah.
You know? Although he is crossing boundaries and it's okay to tell him to get out.
Yeah. Well, he tells him to move out at this point, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool. So then credits roll and we move into the next scene. Monica and Rachel are sitting in the coffee house and Joey walks in wearing his hat.
Oh my, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Joey has some really excellent moments throughout this episode, I think. Yeah.
Also, I think in, like, the whole 10 seasons of Friends, Joey, like, really experiments with his, like...
Fashion.
With his fashion, like, having these, like, fashion statement pieces.
he has this moment where he says, I think it looks jaunty, and then he uses the word cachet.
Which, like, I've never used the word cachet, so I'm very impressed.
Yeah, for sure. And then he says, like, Chandler got me word of the day toilet paper. And the way he does it, like, he just, like, nods, and he's just, like, both so proud of himself, and also just, like, I don't know. He's just, like, loves Chandler, I think, in that moment.
Yeah, like, it's just also, like, another moment of, like, they just get each other so totally. Well, you know, like, and it's like that interesting contrast between like the, you know, the history that we've had between Chandler and Eddie of them just like not being on the same page. And then like, you know, these two not living together anymore. And they just get each other, you know?
Totally.
So beautiful.
Now the question becomes, is there such thing as word of the day toilet paper?
That is the most important question of the episode. By far.
It looks like that's a no.
What? No, I don't believe that. Sorry, that was really loud. I may have made the microphone clip.
I don't know. It doesn't look like it. They have some pretty weird-ass toilet paper. But not...
Can you describe some of these weird-ass, Emily?
They have one that is a bunch of hearts that just says love all over it.
Whoa, like wipe your ass with it?
Yeah, a little questionable. Sorry, now I'm they have one ass. That has... crap jokes design, which is a bunch of jokes about poop. Then they have I love you to the moon and back, moon demonstrating a picture of a butt. Get
oh
it?
Oh my god.
Moon and back. They have one with just a bunch of AK-47 bullets on it. And they have one that says holy shit emoji, you're 21. So
you're 21?
Yeah.
This is a gift specifically for people who are 21.
Yeah.
It doesn't apply to anyone else.
Yeah.
You guys, this is a world that we're living in. It's, you know, it's a time to have, to buy things that are very unique and specific.
Oh, they have one that just says, please wash your hands. Which is pretty fucking lol.
God. So I definitely want that toilet paper. I think it would be freaking hilarious.
I challenge you all in this moment to find word of the day toilet paper and then send it to us.
Send us a roll.
Yes.
And then we can start using words like cachet and jaunty.
Yes, that would be so great. Anyways, okay, so Phoebe walks in and she wants to know if Monica has read a book. The book is called Be Your Own Windkeeper. Oh, and it's about how wind... make women goddesses and men take our wind, and men are the lightning bearers. That's about all we know. Mm-hmm.
There's no one who is non-binary. They do not exist.
Okay. If men are lightning bearers, and women are wind keepers. Wind keepers.
Yeah, I'm like, come on.
What are non-binary people?
We are the wind.
That doesn't make any sense. Wind keepers versus lightning bearers. There's got to be something like thunder in there.
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
You're just nature as a whole.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
Anywho. So the author, like, quote unquote author of Be Your Own Windkeeper is Jennifer Millmore, who is actually the writer, like Gregory S. Mallon's wife.
Cute.
And she actually appears as Lauren, who is the understudy to Kate Miller in a future episode.
Yeah. So if you know, you know.
Yeah. If you know, you know. If you don't, keep watching.
Yeah, and it's just like, okay, so like maybe we'll get into this in a little bit when Ross starts to get involved in this story. But I think that like this is just really vague and not really clear about what they're referring to. Wow, this is the second time your phone has gone off.
Oops.
Was it a reminder to have your last coffee?
Yes, I'm currently drinking my last coffee.
Excellent.
Right on track.
It's not really clear what the book is actually about, but it's basically supposed to be about female empowerment and how men are ruining that. And throughout the entire episode, the women just blame men for everything, which, like, I'm not mad about. But
They're not wrong.
And then we get one of, like, what I think is one of the greatest lines in Friends history. There's two greatest lines in this episode, actually.
How can I grow if you don't let me blow?
No, that's another great line in this episode. But it's the, hello, who wants one of my phallic-shaped men cakes?
Which, by the way, if men cakes doesn't already exist, like, it should be a thing. Like, there's just something about it. Like, men cake.
Phallic-shaped pancakes. Like, also, like, a Kreller is like, now I just really want one of those, but then I have conflicting emotions about the fact that I really want one. Like, I saw Joey holding it, and I was like, yeah, I do want one of those, but I don't want a phallic-shaped man cake. I just want that. And what's really great is that in the DVD version, like, in the streaming version, it just, the scene just cuts, but in the DVD version, Joey, like, looks at the Kreller, and he goes, who have you been dating? Which is just a great line.
It's so good.
Oh, man.
What I really think is interesting... okay, you know what? I want to get into this later when we start deconstructing their like, the reaction of this. So anyway, Ross comes in.
No, sorry. Okay. Next scene, we are in Estelle's office.
Yes.
And if you notice this scene, you'll notice that she keeps cigarettes literally everywhere. Like, she just, like, opens different containers and jars, and there's, like, cigarettes everywhere. And I just, like, I can't even imagine how smoky that office must smell. And, like, oh, I know you're going through that right now, but I, like, can't even imagine how brutal that must be for Joey to, like, walk into that space. And then it makes me think of, like, how did non-smokers survive in a time in which smoking indoors was just, like, completely okay?
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, I remember the Tim Hortons our house had, like, a smoking section. Like, a glass was up in the Tim Hortons. There was a smoking section.
Yeah.
And then when that, like, when they got rid of smoking indoors. But, oh, boy.
Like, oh, boy.
What a time.
You sound like Nora.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Our niece, Nora. She says it all the time.
We've never talked about Nora before, so clearly they don't know who we're talking about.
Well, you know, people are just dropping in for this one episode. True. Hi. Please stay. I love Estelle's character, and I just want to remind everyone that, like, a large part of Estelle's character was brought to the table by the actor herself. Mm. Like, she came in being, like, freaking ridiculous like this, bringing, like, having her, like, smoking a cigarette while eating a sandwich that was in the audition she did that. And that's, like, really what made her character. Like, she just brought it to that level.
Oh, she's so great.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, and then she tells Joey to audition for a role in which he's driving a cab in another soap opera. And he's just, like, really upset at the fact that he is going from being a neurosurgeon in a show to driving a cab. And she just tells him, you know, take any job you can get in this industry. And I think that there's, like, something to be said about that. Like, I think that there is, like, when you are pursuing art as a career, in whatever form it takes, like, there is moments in which you do have to sacrifice, like, growth for money. Like, you literally have to, like, I just think of the, like, when you want to get somewhere in your career, I know some people who are, like, photographers who, like, really don't want to be doing wedding photography, but they go into it because it pays the bills and it allows them to, like, pursue their art in a different way. Or, like, people who, you know, maybe teach dance, be like, while they're paying for, like, them to pursue dance as a career. Like, there's different ways in which, like, you kind of have to, like, settle or, I don't know, like, find different ways to use what you love to do and, like, do it in ways that just, like, makes you enough money so that you can continue to do it. And it can be really hard, I imagine, like, just having to feel like you're taking a step back rather than taking a step forward just so that you can end up paying the bills, you know?
Yeah, I definitely feel for Joey in this situation.
Yeah. You know?
It's harsh.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're back in the coffee shop. Apparently, Rachel read the book very, very quickly.
I know, it's not a very thick book.
Yeah, that's true.
To be fair.
But still, it's, like, pretty fast. And she's just in love with it. And she keeps saying, oh, this book.
I love the line where it's like, this could be titled, Be Your Own Windkeeper, Rachel.
That's so good. You said it in the same intonation.
Yeah.
Also, she's wearing this really cute sweater in this moment, and I just kept thinking about that sweater.
I mean, Rachel's fashion is always on point, but, like, this, and then in the next scene, there when they're all together, like, her wearing the overalls that are folded down with the t-shirt. Yeah. Like, yeah, just excellent stuff. It's great.
Oh, remember at the beginning of the show when we used to do the best outfit of the episode?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
We don't do that anymore. We should go back to doing that.
Things have evolved. Yeah, and then, you know, Ross comes in and he says, oh, sweetie, we gotta go. Like, and she's like, no, I'm not going with you. And, like, this is where I think it starts to break down a little bit. Like, it just kind of it makes it seem like women are not coming from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, like, they're, like, kind of back and forth and not really making any sense as to what they're actually trying to demand or stand for. And, like, when she just says, like, no, why do we have to do everything by your timetable? Like, and he's like, well, it's the movie's timetable, you know? And, like, she's, like, not articulating what she's upset about. And it's just, like, I feel like this is how women are so often written by men. Like, women just being crazy again, like, not making any sense about what they're actually upset about. Yeah. And, like, you don't actually ever really figure out what this book is trying to say, like, except that, like, men steal women's wind, which, like, doesn't really say anything. Like, I get to an extent what it's saying, but, like, yeah, so, like, I guess I just don't really feel like the episode really shows what they're trying to say, and it just kind of makes women seem, like, irrational and stupid and, like, silly when it comes to, like, these big themes of, like, female empowerment and, like, men being dicks and taking wind, which is a
classic
but like it's a thing, like they're saying like men take women's power away or like men, you know, like dampen women's power through a variety of reasons, but they don't actually ever really
with their explain timetables.
It sorry exactly
okay I'm gonna see what you're saying and I'm gonna raise you okay. Or I don't know, whatever, I'm just gonna expand this conversation. Okay, I also want to say, when I see this episode, I think it's hilarious because I think there's also a certain natural process to discovering, like, learning about oppression. And I think that process kind of happens with, like, you find a thing, you read a thing, and you're kind of like, you have this period of time where you're like, oh my God, like, you're, like, reopening your, like, you're opening your eyes to, like, what, seeing things how they actually are. You are going to go through a period of time where you're processing retroactively your entire life experience through this new lens, which A, can take time, and B, can be very, very, very upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, this reaction makes sense. It is, like, a natural reaction to have, right?
Totally.
I mean, it being written by men, I want to put a pin in that. I just want to talk about, like, this process in general. And then also I want to say that, like, as you start to learn about these new things, whatever oppression is affecting you, or just, like, anything new that you resonate with, really, like, you're going to not be able – you're going to know about it well enough to know how it affects you and be in the middle of processing that for yourself, but you're not necessarily going to be able to articulate that to the people around you. And that's, like, a huge challenge. And so, you know, I feel like Rachel's, like, inexplicable anger, like, where she can't really articulate it, but she, like, she can say a thing and she knows what it means for her, but, you know, and there's a large part of, like, oppression in general that, like, she shouldn't have to explain it to Ross, right? Like, he should go fucking pick up that book and read it himself.
But he does.
He does, yes. Well, he gets the book. We don't know if he.
Well, he starts to talk about the stuff to Joey that's in the book.
Right, but
he's like, I don't really get it. I'm like, he's like, there's stuff about wind, and I don't really get it. But like, she seems to be really upset about it.
Right. So. Well, I mean, like, it doesn't indicate that he's actually read the book. It means, like, I think he kind of gets the gist. Anyway,
he could have flipped through.
He could have read the back cover.
Right.
But like, it does sort of, you know,
demonstrate that he's going to read it, I think.
Yeah, and so it's like, you know, that is actually, like, way to go, Ross. You know, like, the point is that, like, you would want people to, not, you don't have to explain yourself to it. You want your partners and your people around you to be able to pick up a book and read it for it themselves and be able to talk to you about it as well.
Totally. But I don't think that the writers were that deep.
I don't particularly think they were either, but I just wanted to, like, draw the parallel that, like, mm-hmm. in this situation, I feel like they are superficializing the situation. That's not a word.
But I understood.
But we get the point, right? Yes. And making a joke and making light of it. And I think that there can be, like, maybe this is more problematic because, like, they're drawing on something that kind of actually really happens. Like, this, the general gist of this is, I think, fairly relatable to people, right? And the problem is that, like, you know, there hasn't actually, like, we're not actually, like, biting into why this is happening and the severity of it and, you know, anyway.
Right. But I understand what you're saying, but I also don't think it's valid to just, like, be really angry and not explain at all why you're angry and just, like, think that you should be validated in that anger without, like, Ross having any knowledge of what she's talking about.
I mean, I think in this scenario, it's, like, fairly, I don't know. I think it's, like, fine to, like, have a reaction to something and you guys can talk about it later. You know, like, I don't think that their argument or the situation here is particularly serious in any real way. You know, it's like, Rachel's going through a thing and, you know, she's going to, like, not go to the movie with him tonight. She needs to be alone and that's okay.
Sure. But I guess, like, I just don't really think it's valid the way that she just, like, gets mad at him and doesn't explain it and just says, like, I just need to be by myself and just, like, walks away and is mad at him and he doesn't know and he has to, like, figure it out on his own. Like, I don't really think that that's necessarily the best way to communicate about something. Like, like, I think you can ask for space, but, like, at least give a little bit more of an indication of why you're asking for space. Like, she literally says to him, like, no, I don't want to do anything that's within your timetable. Like, I just need to be by myself and, like, leaves. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, what just happened? You know? And then, like, obviously he figures it out retroactively because, like, in the next scene he does have the book and he's telling Joey that she's really upset about it. Mm-hmm. But, like, it just feels like, I don't know. I just feel like it's not necessarily valid to just, like, yell at your partner for not understanding you when they have no idea what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I didn't read the situation as so serious, you know, like,
okay,
like for her to just be like, yeah, I just didn't read it as serious as.
Right. I guess, like, because it's a sitcom, it wasn't that serious.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. Anyways, in the next scene, Ross gets yelled at again. This time by Joey.
We're on a roll.
While they're yelling at each other. And I do find, I want to talk about this scene a little bit because I think it's really, really interesting. And I think that in this moment, so the next scene, obviously, we're in Joey's apartment. You know, Joey sees that he has envelope 1 of 2 for his visa bill. His visa bill is really, really freaking high. It's because he bought a lot of stuff at, isn't it, Chromantic? And I Love Lucite.
Porcelain Safari.
Yeah, excellent.
I really, really, really want to go to Porcelain Safari.
Maybe. Sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he basically tells him, Ross basically tells him, like, look, like, yeah, you gotta freaking take that job. Like, you have to take the job where you go to the audition for that cab driver because, like, you need money, man. Like, and I think this is interesting. I think that, like, he definitely does need to take that job, Joey. But it's just questionable as to whether or not this is the right time to do that, to tell him that, you know? And, like, I think that this is a really interesting dynamic that happens in the episode in which, like, he's giving him some tough love, Ross, in this moment. But then Joey asks him for what he needs in that moment. He says, like, you're not supposed to be doing this for me. Like, I want you to tell me that everything's going to be okay. And, like, he tells him that that's what he wants right now. Mm-hmm. And Ross is just like, well, I don't know that everything's going to be okay. Right. Like,
Ross is, is, like, so, like, practical and logical.
Yeah.
He's, like, pushes aside the emotional support aspect of it and is, mm-hmm. like, having more of a, almost, like, it ends up being, like, a tough love conversation of, like, we need reality here.
Yeah. And I just think that this is really interesting because I think, like, I think that this is a very real portrayal of like, navigating through how you should support someone. Like, I think that sometimes it doesn't matter what your intention is. Like, you're going to support someone in a way that they don't want to be supported. And, like, you're not, like, I think that the idea of, like, constantly knowing exactly what your friends need is, like, not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think that it's interesting that, like, Joey tells him what he needs and Ross, like, ignores that or, like, doesn't really hear it or absorb it. But then he later comes back and apologizes for not telling him. Like, I just think that that's very realistic mm-hmm. as a friendship. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
I also love this scene because I don't think we've had a dynamic like this ever in, like, in Friends up to date. Like, in the past, we've had Joey imparting a lot of, like, wisdom and, like...
He's very wisdomous.
Yeah. And, yeah, exactly. He is very wisdomous in a lot of ways. And like, support specifically with, like, Ross and relationships, which is, like, I think this is a really interesting contrast to see because, like, when it comes to, like, the emotional and relationship side of things, Joey is kind of, like...
Quite self-aware.
He's super self-aware and is able to, like, and really supports his friends, especially has, like, really supported Ross over the last, mm-hmm. you know, year and a half or whatever. Season and a half. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is, like, the first time that we actually kind of see the opposite. And again, like, really in their characters, like, Ross kind of supporting Joey, not doing a really good job on the emotional side, but, like, from a perspective of, like, a practicality sense and, like, a you need to make sure your needs are met and, like, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, it's very interesting, you yeah. know?
It makes me think a lot about, like, how valuable it is to have different friends who support you in different ways. Like,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you just need someone who's going to 100% validate you and just, like, just let you be petty or let you be annoyed and just, like, sit there and validate you in that. And then mm-hmm. you need people who are going to, like, be like, yo, this isn't valid. Like, you need to get your shit together or whatever it is. And, like, you need those friends at different point in your life. And, like, I think multiple friends can do that in multiple ways. Like, they you won't always just have one friend who only ever gives you tough love or whatever. But, like, I think that it's really nice to see, like, the ways in which having multiple friends can be really beneficial in the way that, like, you seek support and how you need community and support from your community.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. Yeah. Next scene.
Chandler comes home to Eddie dehydrating.
Yes.
My computer just fell asleep. So he walks in and Eddie's there and he's shocked. But also, like, not fully shocked because the way he walks up the stairs to his apartment is, like, super, like, is he going to be there or not?
Yeah, I don't remember if that's in the streaming version. I think it's maybe just true. In the DVD version.
Yeah. And Eddie's being a little odd, I will say.
A little odd.
Like, he's being weird in the way that I think is awesome because I also love dehydrating.
I know, we went through a big phase as a family in which we had a dehydrator and mom and you were dehydrating everything.
Yeah.
But then he says that they got a new goldfish and he's like, it's a lot feistier than the last one.
Because it's a real goldfish.
As opposed to a goldfish cracker.
I love, like, when it pans in and just, like, looks at the goldfish. I don't know, there's something about me, like, but there's something about it that I just feel like the goldfish is, like, looking at the camera, like, I don't know.
I'm real. I'm a real boy.
Like, clueless to, like, what's happening around him. A complete innocent victim of the situation, quite literally.
So good.
I want to point out a line that happens here where Eddie holds something up and he's like, do you know what this is? Which is hilarious. Because, like, let's be real. Like, when you dehydrate certain things,
they are not obvious as to what they originally were.
Also, you cannot dehydrate a full cantaloupe into a ball.
Yeah, that would be wild.
But, what was I going to say? Right, okay. So Chandler is like, was that your last roommate's kidney? And I just want to point out here, and I'm gonna get more into it, I think, in the next scene between the two of them. But a reminder here that someone with mental illness is actually more likely to be victim of violence than to be the one who is,
yeah,
like hurting other people. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we talked about that in the episode with Brooke Shields.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so like, I want to make that reminder, like, at this point, like, Chandler is really, like, there's a side of it that it's being funny and witty because he's freaked out. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, in the reality of everything, like, still at this point, like, whether or not Eddie has, like, a mental illness is still, like, questionable. Like, why hasn't he left? We don't know yet. You know, like, it could just be that he didn't take Chandler seriously. You know, it was like, oh, it was a fight. You know, like, yeah, we're going to talk about it later and it's going to be fine. You know? But then the scene continues and Chandler's like, you must leave.
No, that's the next scene.
Okay, never mind. Yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, the next two scenes are really, really short. It's just Joey walks into Central Park and he's sitting there and he wants a lemonade. And Gunther's like, oh, lemonade. And it's kind of like one of those classic moments where, like, someone sits at the bar and they're like, I need a strong cup of bourbon or whatever. And they're like, oh boy, what happened to you? You know? He's like, a lemonade. And then he tells Gunther that, you know, he was killed off the show that he was on. And then Gunther reveals that he used to be on a soap opera and was killed off in the show that he was on in the soap opera. And Joey just has this moment of, like, intense realization that, like, that stuff is not forever. Like, you can't, you know, like...
Well, yeah, that, like, Gunther never recovered and, yeah, like, got another, like...
Gig.
And is now, you know, working at the local cafe.
Yeah.
And he would have never thought that he was an actor.
Yeah, exactly.
Did we look up, like, is this real?
No, it's not.
Oh.
He was never on All My Children. Sorry.
That's too bad.
And then the next scene is also really short. It's just Monica watching Chandler sleep on the couch. And then...
to be fair, I didn't actually watch the scene very closely because I was too busy typing. Mm-hmm. But is she actually watching him or is she coming out and being like, why is he on my couch?
No. She sees him on her couch and then she leans onto the back of the couch and gives like a little smile. Like she's like cute, thinks he's cute. And then he turns around in his sleep and sees her. Why must everyone watch me sleep? There will be no watching me sleep. That's really great. And then he walks. So then it's the next morning and he walks into his apartment the next morning.
With the blanket and the pillow.
Yeah, that's great. And then this is just an excellent moment in which Eddie says that he got all this fruit to dehydrate. And then he has these water balloons. And the way he says it is just so freaking funny.
And it makes you be like, yeah. What would happen if you dehydrate water balloons? And now I want to go back to the dehydrator that is at our parents' place and try to dehydrate water balloons.
But it would just...
Yeah, no, I think what would happen is that the outer balloon casing would, like, crack from dehydration.
Oh.
You know, because, like, that kind of, like, rubber and plastic and stuff will crack if it gets, like, dehydrated. Like, think of, like, an old elastic band.
Yeah.
Possibly. I think
would it not, like, would the water, like, how porous? I know it's not very porous because it holds water. Yeah. But is a water balloon porous at all? Like,
I don't know. I'm like, getting so excited right now. I'm like, I really just want to know. I want to try it.
You know what? But I'm going to bet that someone has already done this.
Okay. I just really want to know. Yeah. But I also worry that, like, okay, if my theory is correct and the outside of the water balloon
would crack.
But it would also depend on how quickly you're dehydrating the water balloon. Because, like, you can do it on, like, different temperatures, right? Mm. And so, like, maybe on a lower temperature, like, the type of dehydration that, like, raw foodists kind of consider okay. Mm. I feel like it's possible that Yeah, like the outside of the water balloon would be dehydrated, but the interior would be continuously be... Yeah, I don't even know. I don't even know. Are there any water balloon experts out there that can...
Water balloon experts. That is a specialty if I've ever heard one.
I believe that they exist.
Not just balloon experts. Water balloon experts.
I feel like there's probably some sort of like movie set design person who specializes in water ballooning.
Excellent.
Love I it. See you out there. Come speak to us. Help me.
Anyways. yeah, so Chandler at this moment just is like, he's done. He's at the top of his limit. He says, take your fruit. Your soup is mall fruit. Get up. and then this is where you get my second favorite line, which is a line that I use a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, this is so out of the blue, yeah. Eddie. Which, like, clearly indicates that he doesn't remember the conversation they had.
Yeah. There's something bigger at play. Yeah. This is, like, we have now confirmed that there is something bigger at play.
Yeah, exactly. And he says, this is so out of the blue. And Chandler says the greatest line. And he says, this is not out of the blue. This is smack dab in the middle of the blue. And the way he says it, his intonation, his Chandler-ness about that line just makes it like one of my favorite lines in Friends. It's just, mm-hmm. it's just perfect. It's yeah. all the perfect.
And then I want to point out that then Eddie is like very reasonable and like responds very correctly to the situation. Is like, okay, well, like I'll leave then, you yeah. know, like if you don't want me here, like even though he doesn't understand the situation, which like. Reasonably anyone would actually just argue this if like they mm-hmm. if they did not remember
yeah.
that there was another conversation, you're on two different wavelengths, I would probably be like, what the frick are you talking about?
Right, yeah.
But anyway, he's just like very much like, okay, well, if you don't like me and you don't want me here, like I'll leave. And then he comes back and grabs his fish, and the very poor fish gets put into a pocket.
Yeah.
Which I still feel very sad. We just met the fish.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really care about this fish.
It's very intense. And like Chandler's reaction is just like, what the fuck did I just witness?
Yeah. Like, he's like, you don't see that every day.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's in the streaming version.
I just want to talk about now Eddie. We're now in the zone of like, okay, it's confirmed that Eddie, there's a mental illness at play here. And I want to point out that like, first of all, online, the world of online people kind of talk about Eddie possibly having schizophrenia specifically, if we want to put like a label on the situation.
Undiagnosed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we don't know if it's diagnosed or not. That's like not for anyone to really say.
Well, I think that.
Well, like, so here, I want to go into that a little bit. So we wouldn't know if it's diagnosed or not, because if someone is having an episode that has been spurred on by something, like sometimes there can be a certain amount of like self-consciousness and recognition, and it is all like schizophrenia is different for everyone. But there also could be the possibility that there isn't that self-recognition and understanding of the situation.
Right. So, I meant more just like we can't actually diagnose Eddie, and no one can really diagnose Eddie
yeah.
over just these three episodes of witnessing him. And so like...
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's also mm-hmm. for certain. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just wanted to like say, like up to this point, like Chandler has been really kind of acting like a victim in the situation, which, like, let's be real, it's a very scary situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, there's just so much uncertainty on the table and not understanding exactly what's happening. And it's in your home that, like, I think it's a natural reaction to kind of be like, what the frig is happening, you mm-hmm. know, and being concerned. But I think that what's important in this situation is that, like, we remind ourselves that Eddie or whoever the person is, they are not a villain. Like, mm-hmm. that is not the situation. And their mental health is the threat. And it's more of a threat to them than it is to you. Mm. And we have, and also, like, society is more of a threat to them because of they have this mental illness. Mm-hmm. And
I don't know if I would use the term threat. Like, I saying that his mental illness is a threat to him. Like, I think that's a little intense. Yeah, no, you're right.
That's probably not. I guess what I was just more trying to say that it's like, if you're talking about, like, if you're feeling threatened in the situation, like, like, that threat is not directed at you. Mm-hmm. It's more like the mental illness is the obstacle, and that obstacle is like, if you're feeling threatened by it, it's actually more affecting them than it is affecting you.
Right. You know? But you can also still feel like you're in an unsafe situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, totally. And I guess I wanted to kind of talk about like what you can do in this situation. And because like this is a real situation that happens to people. I think I don't know if I was just talking to you or if I've just said it on the podcast itself. Like this situation has happened to a friend and I have been in like a somewhat relatable scenario. And I guess like the first thing that I want to say is that like, yes, like you feeling safe is important. And like right away, definitely tell a friend who can support you in the situation. And also like Chandler's in a great situation. He was able to sleep at a friend's and like being able to like set that up so that you feel safe and can like sleep somewhere else makes sense. So like definitely do that. But also like at the end of this episode, Eddie ends up homeless out of nowhere. And that's like an important thing to recognize that like someone who has mental illness, who is homeless, is most likely going to be like tossed out in society. And that, like, that's a very scary thing for Eddie. Like, yeah. And it's just like, this is like a part where like society has really just failed so many people. Anyway, sorry, I'm also like kind of emotional and very hyped up on coffee right now. So I'm just like, I think also the first thing that you'd want to do is contact his friends and family. Like Chandler had contact with his ex-girlfriend. Like the first thing that you'd want to do is call his ex-girlfriend and talk to her about it and see like, does his family know? Like, is this a thing that he's been dealing with? Is he diagnosed? Like, what's the history? Is he taking medication? Like, like it's very possible that something happened and he doesn't have access to medication or his medication has stopped working. And like, this is a thing that has been dealt with and there is protocol and like he has support somewhere. But the thing is that like, if he's in the middle of an episode and you just throw him out on the street, then he might never actually get access to those things. Mm-hmm. And now we've put him in a life-threatening situation that could have been easily resolved by talking to friends and family.
Totally.
And then outside of that, also calling your local mental health crisis line. Like, that is also for you to call to find out local resources and to get support. Like, you are probably not, you're probably not equipped to handle the situation, realistically.
Chandler was not.
Chandler definitely was not. And, like, that's what mental health crisis lines are designed for. It's to help connect you to the tools and the people who are equipped to handle these situations. So definitely doing that. And I guess I just want to like point out that like one of the hardest things about being in this situation is that like the world sees these types of episodes on TV and will expect you and tell you to treat this person the way that Chandler treated Eddie. And that can be a really difficult part of the situation, and it's not the appropriate way of handling it. And the fact that like our society belittles mental health in this sense and writes people off as a quote unquote psycho, the way that Chandler calls Eddie, is like completely, it's like just, it's very heartbreaking, and we do not have the resources in our society for this, you know? Also, this is, like, the reason why we need to have access, like, accessible financial help for people to, like, have medication, you know? Like, people can live, like, full lives if they have the proper Medicare access in order to, like, manage their mental health, you know? It's, anyway, so, anyway. I've now gone off on my tangent. I have, and let's circle back around to the show.
Yeah, I do want to, like, bring up the fact that, like, this episode came out 26 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that, like, what Chandler does is okay. But I think, like, recognizing the ways in which, like, the conversation around mental health has drastically changed in the last 26 years,
mm-hmm.
even in the last, like, 10 years. Like, you know, I think we've joked about this probably on the show before, but, like, I remember when we were kids, if you were in therapy, it was like there was something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like if you're a millennial and you're not in therapy, there's something wrong with you. I'm kidding. But, like, usually, like, most people I know are, like, I've had conversations with people who I work for, people who are my bosses who've talked to me about, like, things they've discovered about themselves in therapy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the conversation about being on medication is a lot more open. We now have a lot more conversations about being on medication. And that's not to say it's perfect and we're, like, amazing. And I think that people who've been through, you know, the psychiatric system will definitely say that there's a lot of really horrible things going on in the psychiatric system. But I think that as a whole, we as a society are having much better mm-hmm. conversations about mental health. But on the flip side, we also are having conversations about mental health in the ways that it looks pretty and the ways that it looks inspiring. And, like, you know, we talk about how to deal with your anxiety, how to deal with your depression, but, like, we still don't have conversations in a normal way with, like, how to deal with your roommate if they're, you know, schizophrenic. Like, that's, we don't talk about, like, the uglier sides of mental health. Like, you know, drink a glass of water when you're depressed versus mm-hmm. like, actually, like, depression is messy and terrible and gross, and you might not shower for 6 days, and you might not, like, speak to your friends
six
and family.
6 days minimum.
Yeah. Like, like, there's just so yeah. many ways in which, like, these things are, like, it's messy and ugly and
yeah.
horrifying to be in that headspace. And I think that, like, we still have we've come a long way when it comes to conversations around mental health. And I wonder often whether or not this episode would still exist nowadays. Like, would this episode have been put out? Maybe.
Interesting.
But just because we've come a long way doesn't mean that we don't mm-hmm. have a long way to go.
Yeah. And and just, like, again, like, reinforcing that idea of, like, you know, talking about mental health in, like, the pretty ways, you know, there is a lot of talk about, like, mental health when it comes to, like, personal depression and your personal anxiety and kind of, like, ways that, like, we talk a lot more about mental health, and it's mostly targeted at people who are, like, still within the frame of, like, quote unquote functional, you
yeah.
know, like the people who can still be, like, fit into the capitalist world of being productive.
Yeah.
We still have yet to really, very honestly, be having more and more conversations when we push out of that realm. When we start talking about things like schizophrenia, multiple personality disorders, even, like, you know, we talk about, like, even personality disorders like borderline and narcissism, and we talk about it in some pretty, like, wild ways that are actually, like, not productive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like, FYI, calling, you know, 70% of the population narcissist is just, like, okay, you don't have the context for other conversations Emily and I have, but like, just writing off so many people as narcissists continuously and calling them toxic people and then writing it off is not, like, first of all, narcissism is a real disorder that someone is struggling with. And writing anyone off that you do not like as a narcissist and then calling them people that you don't want to deal with, that is also, like, problematic and mm-hmm. counter progressive or whatever to our actual conversations about how we have to have these hard conversations about mental health and talk about.
It needs to be about community care and not, like, the way, like, we need to be not treating people like they're disposable and having conversations about, just about how we can care for people in our community in a larger way, not on like an individual basis, and putting the onus on individual people to figure out their shit. And like, it just needs to be a larger conversation overall.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think we've talked a lot about this.
Yes.
Okay. If you, as always, if you have things that you want to share, if you have specific experiences that are similar to this, or
resources that you want us to like, give out to the community to expand on this.
Yeah. If you yourself have schizophrenia and don't like the way we spoke about this, like, let us know. Like, I think that it's really important to be having these conversations, even if they're uncomfortable, even if they, you know, aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, moving on, Joey is at his audition. He decides he's going to go to the cab driver audition. He pretty much blows it. He's wearing the hat.
I also, like, he does this thing where he's, like, trying to, like put in that he was, like, Dr. Drake Ramore on a big show. But he does it in a way that just makes him sound, like, super pretentious, you know? Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, when I was Dr. Drake Ramore on this show, you know, like, they used to send us over the pages printed on real paper, not this faxing shit.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's, like, kind of one of those things that, like, in every job interview, like, everyone is, like, most people are kind of concerned about, I find, where it's sort of, like, you want to go in there and you want to basically put your experience and your best foot forward, but you're concerned about, like, becoming off as, like, too full of yourself. And I feel like this was that situation, and Joey kind of blew it.
Yeah. That's interesting that you say that. Like, that feeling of, like, I need to talk myself up, but I also don't want to sound super arrogant.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Joey just sounded arrogant.
Yeah, totally. And then obviously it doesn't go well. He leaves, and it clearly was not. He didn't get the position or the part.
The position. It was a job interview. Which kind of was. Kinda, yeah, was. Exactly.
So then the next scene, we are back in Monica and Rachel's apartment. Monica, Rachel, and Phoebe are there, and they are taking a, like, lightning bear beer on Windkeeper quiz. It just starts to escalate. So.
Well, also I want to point out that in the DVD version, the scene opens up and Rachel is on the phone with Ross, and the conversation, like, you only hear the one side, obviously, but you kind of piece together that Ross is sort of checking in and, like, kind of apologizing, like, he didn't mean to do this, like, thing that he didn't understand before, and Rachel being like, no, I know that you didn't mean to do that. I, you know, like, they're like,
I just don't think that Ross actually has anything to apologize for. Like, he has a lot to apologize for in his existence as a whole. He has nothing to apologize for that last scene. Where right. he, like, but he told her that they were going to a movie, and he told her that we can't be late for the movie, and she got mad at him for suggesting that they go to a movie when they had clearly already made these plans, and she, like, yelled at him and left. Like, he has nothing to apologize for.
You're very passionate about this.
Well, I just, like, I believe in shitting on Ross, but I believe in shitting on Ross at appropriate times.
Okay, here, look. I don't believe this is a situation where we're shitting on Ross.
What podcast are you listening to?
I don't think this is an episode of shitting on Ross. I think that Ross actually does the right, like, the perfectly right thing in this episode.
Yeah, me too. And it's shocking.
The look on Emily's face right now, it looks like she's going to bite me.
I just don't think
I'm going to go down this path anyways. And, you know, if I die, you guys all know why. but, okay. Here's my thought. Is that, like, we're talking about what is principle, like, right on principle versus what is right in the situation for your partner. Right? Like, totally. Like, you're looking at it on a place, like, on principle, Ross did nothing wrong in that one scene. Whereas, like, in the relationship, though, that argument didn't have to do with that one scene, right? It's like, Rachel is learning something about, you know, we can see it as female oppression in the world. Her reaction to him in that moment was not for that moment. It was about oppression in general. And her learning about her oppression and her relationship with men. And Ross showing up to the plate and reading the book, A++. You are doing the right thing.
Totally.
And then showing up and being like, wow, you're learning about this thing that's really hard. I don't want to make you feel this way. If you're feeling like, if you're saying that in that moment that you feel like I do this thing that is oppressive that we've read about in this book, like, I don't want you to think that I want to make you feel that way. And then
apologize for showing up in the relationship in that way.
Yeah.
That he has learned about through reading the book, that she learned about by reading the book.
And recognizing that her, like, outburst was not about, like, who was right or wrong in that situation, but it's about, like, a complex system of issues that, like, he plays a role in no matter what, you know? And
I agree with you. I do. And I 100% agree with what you're saying, and I think that you are right. The only thing is that I just think that the writers are not doing that. I think the writers are doing that thing that always fucking happens in this show and always happens in, like, shows in general, in which, like, there's this ongoing joke about how women get mad for no reason and they're so unreasonable and men just have to shut up and apologize and, like, you know, happy wife, happy life. And, like, this really sexist understanding of, like, just if men just accept that women are crazy and, like, they'll never understand their wives, but they just, like, apologize, then they're gonna have a good relationship. Like, and I just think that's bullshit, and I think that it really boils down, like, these massive, huge feminist issues into, like, you know, men just need to, like, appease to their, like, crazy wives, and, like, I hate that
right.
So much.
No, and, you know, I love this conversation because it's exactly what I think we kind of go back and forth with in doing this podcast, is, like, the A, looking at these characters and storylines and dissecting them as real people, but then also having to take that step back and look at, like, oh, they aren't real people. They're written by other people. Oh,
mostly men. Mostly white men.
Those people are white men. What does that mean? And that's, like, an important thing to look at. And I think that in general, as a society, we have a hard time, looking at it in both those ways. You know, I remember once having a conversation about Wonder Woman, like, after seeing Wonder Woman with my partner at the time. And I was like, oh, I'm so angry that she was, like, so freaking skinny. Like it doesn't even make any sense that she lost a whole bunch of weight for that role, if you didn't know. And the person that I was dating was like, well, it's not her fault, like, you know, that she's skinny. And I was like, that's not the point. The point is not, it's on her. It's never on her. The point is that, like, they cast someone specifically to look a specific way and to paint a very specific thing. And it's, like, that separation of, like understanding, like, not looking at it for what it is, but seeing the bigger picture and, like, right, the cogs behind the front, you know?
Yeah. There's a writer room. There's a writer's room.
Yeah.
And people are putting...
And a casting crew and the, you know, and it's, there's all this intention put behind it, and sometimes not malicious intention, you know, mm-hmm, but it's problematic all the same.
Yeah. Totally. I agree. And, like, in this whole scene where we continue through, like, they go through this quiz and, like, they just continue to portray women as, like, I just think that the lesson of this episode is, like, women empowerment isn't real because women are, like, betray each other all the time and women are vindictive and, like, and I just, like, you know, like, oh, you totally let him wash your feet in the pool of your inner power, you know? And then, like, they all get mad at each other because, like, Phoebe slept with Jason Hurley and, like, Monica, like slept with someone on the first date and, like, you know.
Which, like, who cares?
Rachel, like, betrayed Monica. And, like, it's just, like, all of these moments of, like, women are so vindictive and women are, like, always shitting on each other and, like, you know, men aren't the one oppressing women. Women are the one oppressing women. Like, you know, and when you hear women say, oh, I'm not friends with any women because they're so mean, I'm only friends with dudes. Like, That's the fucking patriarchy. Like, that is, like, that is the entire system that we've created in which we've, like, told the universe that women are crazy, women are emotional, like, women can't develop real relationships because they're just going to backstab each other. Like, it's just this entire fake news. That's, like,
fake news.
It's, like, it's just, it's all a fucking lie. And, like, I hate it. I just hate. And this is such a theme in this show. Throughout the entire show, they always do this, that, like, men and women are so different. And, like...
Yeah, we haven't talked about that recently, actually.
But, like, that's, like...
Sometimes I feel like we overly talk about things, but it's just, like, no, it's just necessary. We need to keep talking about it.
But, like, you know, like, this is the era of, like, the books that were coming out of, like... Women are from Mars, men are from Venus, or whatever. No, it's the opposite. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
Who cares?
Like, that was a real fucking book, guys. Like,
oh my God. And that's, like, just one of them out of a million.
And just, like, and it's, like, yes, you know, you're listening to this podcast, so you must have some sort of acknowledgement of, like, these systems. But, like, there's so many people in the universe who still genuinely believe this shit, and, like, it angers me so much. Like, you listen to podcasts where men are talking about being an alpha male and how they can't date women who make their own money because they have no need for a man anymore if they make their own money. Literally heard a podcast where a dude said that.
Okay. First of all, I had a real conversation with someone recently about the alpha male thing. Like, I thought it was... You know, like, when you know that a thing is a conversation, but you don't actually believe it's real? So, first of all, I had a real conversation.
Just goes to show you that we hang out with good people, that we don't have to encounter this on a regular basis.
But first of all, that person is someone that we knew.
Oh, gosh.
Like, you know.
I know who it is already.
And then, secondly, I then ran into...
Is it someone who listens to this podcast?
No.
Okay.
I then ran into a YouTube video, and I had to delve into this world and understand it. And there was, like, legit, like, super bro-y YouTube channel talking about, like, the alpha male versus the beta male and how you actually want to be, like, an omega male.
Why?
And just...
Why?
Just... Yeah. It was very...
You know, this is, do you know that, have we talked about this on this podcast before? Do you know that, like, the alpha male thing is all based on, like, this study that was done literally about wolves? But, like, the stupidest part is that, like, this study was done about wolves in captivity, and it actually is not realistic to how wolves exist in real life. And so this entire fucking premise of the alpha male is actually based on something that literally isn't wrong. Like, it's a scientific study that, like, is not an accurate portrayal of wolves.
By the way, just in case no one realized or put this together, that wolves and all studies of wolves would not apply to human behavior. Just in case no one put that together.
How it's people, I can't even, Quinn.
Like, if it was a study on, like, apes and, like, people were coming out with this, I would, like, have more sympathy or empathy to, like, why people were, like, going on these tangents, maybe. You know, I would still give it a real hard time, and obviously, because it would be incorrect. But the fact that it is wolves, it just, anyway.
It's very upsetting. Anyways, I know this podcast is getting pretty fucking ranty, but, like, honestly...
I hope you're here with us, folks. I just hope you're here along, and we're just being cathartic for you, and, like, we're saying the things that you need to hear.
And if you like, are concerned that, like, we would be mad at you if you brought up these things because you don't really necessarily understand them or understand what we're saying, like, just know that, like, we wouldn't get mad at you. Like, I will have a conversation with you about this, and we can chat about it because, like, we will not... dispose of you because you don't understand these ideas. We will be there and we'll have these conversations.
Or have a different thought pattern on it. That's also,
like, we will talk about it. Let's talk. Let's have fucking community care and talk about these issues and make the world a better place, okay? Anyways, next scene. We're back in Joey's apartment and the repo people are taking stuff out of his apartment. So Ross walks in, and I copy and pasted this conversation because I think it's really great. And I think that, like, Ross does a really good job apologizing in this moment. And I think, like,
he does a really good job, and he also, like, super overcompensates.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Like, it just gets to be this, yeah.
It's actually very heartwarming, like.
And kind of relatable, because you're like, I just want to make you feel good, and I don't really know how to do that, so I'm just going to come here with this energy.
Just go with the flow. Just going to go with
good
the flow.
Good for you.
No matter what, I'm supporting you. Yeah. I feel like that's happened with us before.
Totally. But yeah, no, I think, like, Ross says, like, look, I wasn't right. I came here to tell you this. I was totally hung up on my own stuff. Like, I'm someone who needs the whole security thing. You know, and he says, like, Joey, I think you're amazing. You know, I can never do what you do. And he's like, you know, you should hold out for something bigger. You're right. And he, like, comes to Joey with, like, this recognition that he did not support him in the way that Joey had needed to be supported in that moment.
Yeah.
And, like, is shifting and decides to support him in the way that Joey had asked to be supported to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, if that's not the most real, like, portrayal of the ways in which you navigate supporting your friends, like, I don't know what is. Because that is fucking real. Like, mm-hmm. where you're like, I totally thought I was supporting you. Clearly I did it wrong, and clearly I wasn't able to do it in the way that you needed me to. But, like, you communicated that to me, and, like, I can come here, and I can apologize, and I can support you in the way that you need to be supported. And it's like, that's great. I love to see that.
Yeah. And then
he buys the dog. Ceramic dog.
It's on casters.
What is that for?
I don't know, but I love it.
Statue on casters.
I love it even more. And so, also, if you haven't watched all 10 seasons, this dog
returns.
Is part of the family now.
Yeah. So, anyways, we go to the next scene, and I find it funny how you see this juxtaposition of two different apologies. One is from Ross. Really seeing Joey, really mm-hmm. apologizing in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. And then Rachel comes in and, like, apologizes by giving them cake and then taking the cake back. But she does a pretty good line, which I think is good. And, like, I'll give the writers this tiny little bit of credit where she says, we already have enough trouble stealing each other's wins. We already have enough trouble with men stealing our wins without taking it from each other. And obviously, wind being whatever the heck wind is, but, like, men already are constantly, like, we're already facing oppression by men. We can't, like, turn on each other. We need mm-hmm. to, like, have each other's back. And
which is a very real thing, right? Like,
totally.
The patriarchy purposely creates, like, women versus women dynamics.
Yeah.
And taking down those dynamics is a very important part of feminism and dismantling the patriarchy.
Yeah. You don't need to like every single woman, but you
do. Respect and support and boundaries. Because you don't have to do it endlessly for everyone.
I don't know if I want to respect every woman. I don't know. There's like, I do think class dynamics is real. Shitty racist women are real. Like, I don't know.
I think that, like, pretty much every human deserves a base level of respect.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But, like, I don't want to necessarily, like, be like, girl boss, you treat all your employees like shit, but you're the CEO of the company. Go, girl. Like, I really don't want that.
Yeah, but that's like being someone's number one fan. Like, you don't have to be every woman's number one fan. Mm. You can just respect every woman. Because there's a lot of, like...
I guess
we don't talk about
this. We should respect every human being.
Yeah. So, then we're...
We kind of already covered this scene, but...
Yeah, Chandler comes in, says, ding dong, the psycho's gone. Which, you know, problematic. But let's not get into that. And then, instead, Eddie ends up showing up...
with a head for Mason.
Okay. Like, they make the scene to make him seem, like, creepy and weird. Totally. But I freaking love it.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of friends who would love
it. I think that you can appreciate the humor of this scene without... Like, you can appreciate... And even the last scene where, like, they fully gaslight him. Like, I think that you can appreciate the humor of the scene while still taking a look at the bigger picture. Which is what this entire fucking podcast is about. Appreciating mm-hmm. the humor of friends while dissecting it.
Yeah. I mean, like, the humor is Chandler's horror.
Yeah. But, like, what I love here is he, like, tries to speak to him calmly. Like, he's, like, clearly yelling at him has not worked. I need to, like, calm down a little bit, and I need to, like, speak to him. And, like, obviously he makes those faces behind his back when he turns away. But, mm-hmm. like, he's, like, what did we do yesterday? You know? He's, like,
yeah.
We took a road trip to Las Vegas. And he's, like, what the fuck? Like, I literally do not understand what's happening right now. And then that's, like, clearly an indication that something's up, because mm-hmm. he has no memory of their conversation. And not only does he have no memory of their conversation, but he has an entirely different memory of what happened and of his life. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if it's not the most Phoebe thing ever.
Yeah.
As he leaves, Phoebe's like, is anyone else really starting to like that guy? And you're just like, I love you, Phoebe.
Yes, I love that. Sorry, I'm taking down a note for later for the section where we talk about spoiler parts. Yeah, I love how Phoebe in this moment is like, don't you just love him? Yeah. I'm like, I do, Phoebe. And this, I would love to have a roommate who's like, let's have this random mannequin head as like a talking piece in our apartment. I think that's so cool.
I do feel like I also Phoebe like and Eddie though, would so. Make good roommates now that I think about it.
Yeah, they really would. Oh, I wish we had gone down that road.
Because I feel like Phoebe, like, has endless patience and, like, well, no, she doesn't have endless patience for Ross, but she's endless patience for mostly everyone else. And, like, yeah, I feel like she would be.
Oh, my God. And then we could have had Eddie as a permanent piece on the show. Oh, I would have loved that, actually.
But they would completely have to change the way he's portrayed, because the entire time he's portrayed as, like, a big joke, right? So.
Yeah, a big joke, but it would be interesting to go down the road of having, like, someone who's, you know, possibly schizophrenic, who's dealing with schizophrenic episodes on the regular, and, like, having a group of friends who navigate that with him. Like, mm-hmm. that's beautiful.
All right. Moving on. So then they go to the next episode, next scene, and it's just Eddie walking to the apartment. He tries to put his key into the door. The key doesn't work. He knocks on the door. The door's locked. And then you get this scene where Chandler pretends to not know Eddie. He says, you know, that he already has a roommate. You get this excellent chair turn from Joey, which, like, I have a lot of love for the scene simply because, like, I love that Joey is back with Chandler. You know, like, I love that moment of them being back together. And I think, like, when I first saw this, when I didn't have, like, the mm-hmm. idea of, like, what this means for mental health stuff, like, I think I was like, wow, this is actually a really genius move on Chandler's part. Like, I was like.
Yeah, totally. Like, when you first see it at face value, like, and you don't understand the context,
mm-hmm.
like, and this is, again, where, like, media becomes sort of misleading. Like, it feels like you've outsmarted.
Yeah, like, you beat him at his own game.
Yeah,
his own
exactly.
crazy game.
Yeah, it's like,
you know, like.
You just. You know, you can't beat him, join him, you know, it's like that kind of mentality, but without actually looking at the true repercussions of the situation, the actual meaning of it, and like, Eddie is homeless now, we have someone who is having possibly a schizophrenic episode who is now homeless, and that is very, like, everyone should be uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Chandler calls him a fruit giant psychopath. And then
they have
this a very cute moment together
where
they're like, we're back on the same level. We're living together. And they have their little victory dance.
Yeah.
And their like excitement dance, which is very cute. And they have their jumping hug, which is even better.
It's cute because they first hug each other. And then they, like, get apart, and then they hug each other and jump together, I think is really cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, I think I really like this moment where Joey's like, I'm not moving back in because I have to. And he's like, well, I have to, but, like, it's also because I want to. And I think that's really sweet that he's like, he's like, I want to be here. And I know that, like to me, it feels like he's acknowledging the fact that, like, they had that whole thing when he left, which was like, I don't need a roommate. I don't need you. I don't like, I'm my own person. Like, you know, I'm doing my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of just being like, I do need you. Like, I want you in my life.
Yeah. And, like, you and this place is home to me.
Yeah.
Like, we make a home together.
Yeah.
You and your friends can make a home together.
Yeah. Ugh. I just wrote, their love is so pure.
And then we have that bonus scene at the end.
The ceramic dog scene.
Which is my favorite line in that scene is how, like, my words. Joey is sort of like, yeah, well, like, now it's, like, kind of out of place, you know? Like, before I had, like, a whole, like, animal, ceramic animal thing going on. And Chandler's like, yes, more is always better with this type of thing. And I feel like this is such, like, a real thing that, like, someone who, like, maybe has, like, a really, like, kitschy style or whatever, it's like, the kitschy maybe makes sense when there's a lot of it, but also, like, then there's just a lot of kitschy, you know? Agree. Which, like, I'm all for kitsch, you know, but...
All that to say, who do you think is the best friend of the episode?
I would say Ross.
I also agree.
Yeah. He definitely, like...
It's not very often that we put Ross as the best friend of the episode.
Although, I think there was a few episodes ago that we did the same thing, and we were like, oh my god, I think Ross is the best friend of the episode. But that was mostly just because everyone was kind of shitty.
Yeah. But in this episode, like, he's a solid good friend.
Yeah. He maybe doesn't have the best first reaction, but, like, it was a real, like, it made sense how he was reacting in a lot of ways. And then he came back and he, like, really was supporting Joey. And he also, like tried really hard in his relationship with Rachel to, like, make things right. Even when, like, you could say on a practical sense, like, Rachel had nothing to get upset with him for, but, like, he looked at it in a bigger picture sense and tried to understand her and where she was coming from. And then, like...
I agree.
Yeah. I think that he was just, like, this is, like...
Peak Ross.
Peak Ross.
Keep deconstructing.
And diversifying.
The media you consume.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at wtphalangepod, or follow us on Instagram at wtphalangepodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.